This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty large black bags.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast, your place to go for on-demand Titans coverage that is 100% free of the nonsense that we always see in sports talk these days. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of No Nonsense, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. If it is your first time joining us, we hope you enjoy the show. You can follow us on social media, Twitter and Facebook, at No Nonsense Pod. If you're a longtime listener and you want easier and faster access to all of our new episodes every Wednesday, you can do that, you can get that, by following or subscribing to the show wherever you choose to listen. Guys, we have got a disappointing one to cover today, a crushing one to talk about for the Titans as we recap their divisional round loss to the Bengals and in turn the 2021 season as a whole. Watching that game, specifically watching from the last Tannehill interception through the McPherson winning field goal, to me was the equivalent of this situation. You are with your buddy, just hanging out, and then all of a sudden, his or her significant other comes in and just starts screaming at them, like, no holds bar, you mother bleeper, you know. Just starts reading them the riot act and screaming at them. And you're in the corner, and you're like, oh, no, gosh, please end this. Please stop. Right? That's what I felt like watching that. Because I was watching the Titans come crashing down. I was watching that stadium go from being fired up, thinking it was about to get a win, to being bereft and silent. And it was uncomfortable watching the Titans blow that game. Just before we get into the reasons why, before we break down who's to blame and all that, just brutal, man, the ending to that game.
Yeah, brutal is the right way to say it. It is just so... it is so annoying to turn the ball over as many times as the Titans did. And even with that, they still had a chance to win this game. And they had a couple of chances. Like, even on the drive before the interception, they get a turnover on downs on a play that you just expect Derrick Henry to get a yard or whatever. It was 1 or 2 yards. I can't remember. But it was just really annoying, man. Really annoying. And it reminded me a lot of that Ravens playoff game. When the Titans were the one seed, I think they were the one seed. They at least had the bye in the 2008 season. It was the same exact game. Like, the Titans just kept turning the ball over, and then the other team just gets a last-minute, last-second field goal. And you feel terrible. You feel terrible because that's just not the way you're expecting your team to go out, and it just really hurts. But, I mean, it's a lesson. It's a lesson. You can't win playoff games, you can't win NFL games when you turn the ball over as much as the Titans did in this one and as much as the Titans have done in a couple of previous games this season. And I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a point of emphasis going forward in the next season, but it just sucks. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sucks, obviously, how it went down. It sucks that the narrative now is the number one seed is poison for the Titans, and even if they get it, they'll never have actually earned. And now, I mean, I guess there could be a scenario, but it's just like, you know, from here on out, if you're the one seed, they're going to bring up these last 2 years where you've been the one seed. If you're lower than the one seed, they're going to talk about how you're not as good as this team, this team, this team. And, you know, at this point, that's just kind of the reputation you earn until you prove them right. Because, you know, for as much defense of the team as there was going into this game and all season long, like, this is what everybody said they were going to do. And this is what they did. So, you know, it's brutal to have the things you've been defending against all season confirmed, right, wrong, or other. Like, yeah, at the end of the day, it's if you win a game or not.
Yeah, all those national media types who were spending the weeks leading up to that game calling the Titans, you know, the worst one seed ever, and how did this happen? They're patting themselves on the back right now. Because like you said, Will, it might not be factually correct, but in a way, like, it was confirmed with the way that that game ended. And, you know, every time we approach this Titans not getting any national respect thing, they tend to kind of blow it. And every time, it's the old Matt Neely quote, right? Matt Neely, I remember he would tweet that his dad used to always tell him, you know, they'll only let you down, son. They'll only let you down. And it was the classic Titans letdown. And look, right, this was a good football team. It was close to being a great football team. 12-5, number one seed. I'm a big Vrabel fan. You know, I love some of these pieces that they have. I think they've got a good core. We'll get into the reasons why it didn't go well. But they did what they always seem to do. They brought the fans up, pulled them up to the sky, got them so excited. I mean, I was down there in the stands for the Derrick Henry intro. I mean, it was just electric. And then they bring him crashing down right afterward.
Yeah, it's awful, man. It feels terrible. And yeah, the fact that everyone just gets proven right about the team. And I don't know if necessarily they get proven right, because I think a lot of the takes about the Titans were a little outlandish and a little exaggerated. But like, they turned the ball over three times. Like, you can't do this in the NFL playoffs. And to come out after the Derrick Henry intro, everyone is fired up, and on the first play of the game, you throw an interception. I mean, what an awful way to start. Thankfully, the defense did its job. They played amazing, and they tried everything they possibly could to get the Titans a victory. But, you know, the quarterback and the offensive coordinator together just did not allow that to happen. It just feels bad, because this felt like the year that the Titans could really make it to the Super Bowl and possibly win it. Because, like, no one really has shown to be capable of being an elite team this season. And the Titans had beaten the two remaining AFC teams and the Bills and the Chiefs. They beat everyone. They beat the Rams and the Niners also. Like, this was a match, a road made in heaven, but it just wasn't to be. And when you turn the ball over, it's just never going to be.
Yeah, like, they had the one thing that, you know, the rest of the teams really didn't have, which was multiple threats to rush the passer and, like, a really good, like, defensive front. Like, the rest of the teams, I guess the 49ers, not the 49ers, the Rams may have that, and Donald and Miller, but and with Floyd. But even then, like, they kind of just abused the backup right tackle on Sunday when they played. But they may be in the same league. But other than that, like, the AFC side especially is just dominated by, like, offenses that, you know, they have to put up 35 points, because if they don't, they're going to get gashed for big plays and lose the game. But yeah, like, the Titans lost it the only way they could have, which is turning the ball over.
And the thing about those turnovers, and we'll get into this when we talk about Tannehill, of course, but you know, that was a problem all season beyond Tannehill. They could not hold on to the football. They had 6 out of their 18 games this year. 1/3 of their games, they turned the ball over at least 3 times. That's just unacceptable. 4 games with at least 4 turnovers. I mean, how wild is that? And no one could ever, from them, it's not our job to, no one could ever put a finger on what was happening. They just were addicted to coughing the ball up. They got over their adversity addiction, right? They detoxed from that, and then they moved on to being addicted to coughing the ball up.
Yeah, and addicted to slow starts on offense, which, once again, the exact same thing.
Did we not have that conversation each of the last 2 weeks? I wrote a column about it last week. 3 times out of 18, they scored points on opening drives. 17 points all season on opening drives in 18 attempts. Just terrible.
Yeah, and shame on us for expecting any different. Well, I don't know if we expected anything.
Yeah, I didn't expect it.
But it was worse. Like, it was actually worse because this was more than one drive that really went poorly. I mean, it took them, let me see, 1, 2, 3... for until the 5th drive for them to actually put a decent offensive drive together and score a touchdown. And then it just went back. It went back to normal. Like, nothing. They didn't break the seal. They just ended up having terrible drives again. They couldn't get anything going on offense. Derrick Henry did not look like Derrick Henry. It was a disaster. And it was just so frustrating to watch because that game was right there. Like, the Bengals cannot block anyone, man.
Will,
no one.
Will, go ahead. There's something you mentioned I want to hit on real fast, but finish what you were saying.
No, I was pretty much done. It was just like, I can't believe they wasted that defensive performance. Like, any other team in the league wins that game with that defensive performance, but not the Titans, I guess.
Well, what did you think about Derrick Henry? Because I wasn't, you know, like, appalled by his performance, whereas I had people in my mentions on Twitter being like, well, they should have let Foreman be the running back one, because clearly Henry stunk, and now I'm seeing, like, people talking about trading Derrick Henry. Like, I didn't think he was that bad. He wasn't, you know, well, but, yeah, it was fine.
I mean, he was their third best running back. I mean, it was bad. Like, the
really?
Problem is, yeah, well, the problem is, they gave it to him on that 4th and 1, and
he had no shot on that 4th and 1.
Well, but there's been times when he's had no shot, but when it's 4th and 1, all you really have to do is get to the line and fall forward when you're his height. Now, could he have got to the line? I don't know. That's for a different time. But, you know, it was one of those things where you kind of expect him to be able to do something or make something happen. He didn't. They gave it to him on the 1-yard line for the 2-point conversion. He couldn't get that. He tried to bounce outside and stiff arm a guy, and he fell because he didn't really have his timing right and he didn't really have his balance. I mean, the worst thing for him is that Foreman was very clearly better. Like, and that's not going to happen every day. But if you're watching, as soon as Henry was active, there was no chance that Foreman was getting splitting touches. We said that at the time. It made, you know, that's what it felt like. But Henry was just not Henry. Like, he wasn't King Henry, and he was kind of like early season, like 2019, 2018 Derrick Henry, where it's just like too tentative to kind of hit the holes when they're there. Not really getting anything more than he should have. And, you know, usually we would blame that on the offensive line, but man, Foreman came in and just looked different. I mean, looked so much more physical and faster.
That 45-yard run was friggin' awesome.
Yeah.
Bouncing off a guy, staying up. I mean, he looked like Alvin Kamara on that 45-yard run.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, because they took Henry out, I think, after the first drive, or maybe it was after the second, and I think they gave the two next drives to Foreman, and, like, I don't know, like, I mean, like, they didn't give him the ball enough for it to really have made an impact, but, like, he looked good when he was in. And then, you know, Henry had the, like, the wildcat touchdown thing, which that works more from a, like, schematic standpoint than anything else. Like, it's because you get, that's a way to get him in space with smaller guys and use his power, or he can dive up the middle if he thinks that is the better idea. Like, that's, it's a good play call. It's, like, one of the few that we have. But, like, outside of that, like, I mean, he really just didn't look like he had it.
I think everyone can agree that the two biggest problems, no matter where you rank them, the yes. two problems for the Titans on Saturday were the quarterback and the offensive coordinator. Agreed?
Agreed.
Yes.
So, let's talk about each of those things. We're going to start with Todd Downing. But I think we should preface it, this and the Tannehill conversation. We get that they went 12-5. We get that they had the number one seed, right? The Titans are not in some dire situation. This conversation is not us saying, you know, man, they had that loss and the future looks grim because look at who they're going to, like, I did the exercise on Twitter today. Like, it's going to be basically the same team next year. Like, everything's fine. They're going to win the division again next year. They're going to be favored to do so, you would think, with the Colts collapse and people kind of being out on them. But that being said, let's get into Todd Downing. What are the problems? What went wrong? What should have gone better?
Same thing as always. My biggest issue with him is he has no rhythm for any offensive drive. Like, even it could be for one drive, and then the next drive he just either does something completely generic and doesn't capitalize on what was working well, or even within a known drive. Like, after the Bengals scored the touchdown to start the second half, the Titans are running down the field. Everything is great. Four straight runs, I think it was, between Henry and then Foreman, that 45-yarder. And then he runs an RPO bubble screen to Chester Rogers.
I don't care what the situation is. That play sucks. It needs to be thrown into the garbage.
It's unbelievable. Like, I understand, like, Mike Hilton made a great play. I don't know if Tannehill should have thrown it. It was a little, I don't know. The person I'm going to blame for that one is Todd Downing, because there's no reason to run that play from the 9-yard line when you had just run four running plays that all worked, and they got you down there. And this has happened all season. And the slow starts also, like, I don't understand, man. How do you not game plan better for a defense that you had probably 2 weeks to prepare for, because they were favored against the Raiders and probably were going to beat the Raiders? You knew you were probably going to play them. How is that how you come out for the first four drives of this game?
I think after the Foreman run, the next play should have been obvious. They should have given Foreman a rest after he did that. You bring Derek back in and you run that zone read, right? That was the time for the zone read, not necessarily the third and one.
Or just give the ball to Foreman again.
Or, like, Henry. Either one.
Yeah, anybody. Like, it's very – like, there's a lot of things that he does very wrong. So, everybody's talked about it at this point, but that's the only RPO the Titans run, and I believe they run it out of the same formation every single time.
Are you talking about the zone read?
No. The RPO, the
stupid Rodgers bubble thing.
Yeah, supposedly they do it out of the same formation. I know they've done it when it's like, I don't know if it's a true RPO or just a quick pass, but they've done it when they have like Julio isolated or somebody isolated like on one side with one-on-one and safety help overshaded to the other side. But like this specific thing is like, let's get it to Chester Rogers in space. And it's like, if it had worked a few times, okay, keep doing it. But it's never worked.
Was it No Flags Film that made that thread talking about all the times they've run this play and like the best it did was like 5 yards?
No, I don't know, but that would sound correct. So that's bad. You know, not for the first time. they had Julio Jones on the sideline during the final drive, right? Like, it was...
Yeah, that was confusing. But I mean, honestly, I feel like that's not a Downing thing. That's either a Rob Moore or Mike Vrabel thing. Not specifically having Julio out. I don't think Vrabel said, no Julio this drive. It's their... We've talked about this on here before, the rotation stuff they do at receiver.
Yeah, and that's fine, but in critical... Like, they don't rotate Simmons off of the goal line on third and one.
Yeah, but Simmons isn't a receiver. That's what we're talking about here.
No, but they do rotate defensive tackles a lot. What I'm saying is, like, you have to be situationally aware enough when you have a full week to prepare.
Well, yeah.
Maybe, or sorry, 2 weeks to prepare. Maybe one thing you really try to put in is getting Julio in your two-minute offense.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was the correct decision or even near that. I'm just trying to explain...
Yeah,
what they typically do.
Yeah, and again, like, okay, that's fine, but that is an unacceptable response to why was he not out there on the final drive of the game? Like I don't know what he doesn't know about the offense after a full year and 2 weeks of prep for this that he couldn't be out there. But there's no reason to me why he shouldn't have been out there. Like. If you're going to go in a two-minute drive, it's not like you're going to have 45 plays. Like, you don't need to rest your guys then. And if you do, rest them after. Well, I mean, like, or rest them in the middle of the drive and switch personnel or whatever. But, like, have him out there on those plays. Like, maybe rest him when you're past the 50 and you're trying to get in field goal position, not when you're trying to get past the 50. Like, it really does. There is no excuse, whether it's a Vrabel thing or whoever. It is an unacceptable outcome. So there's that. That's a bad thing. Like, the Henry splits are bad, but it's just what they do when Henry's in. Like when Henry's in, he's going to get 20 touches, whether he's good or bad. Like, it's been that way. It was that year, it was that way last year when he was, you know, bad early in the season or just unproductive early in the season, and he really worked himself into form and had the season that he did. But it's just that they're never going to take him off the field if they don't have to. So that's another bad thing that he does.
But I don't even think you've gotten into the meat of the problem yet. And I'm 100% with you on the Downing stuff. Like, you're burying the lead, man. You're talking about Julio not being out there for a few plays and Derrick Henry splits. We're missing the what's it called? What's the phrase? The smoking gun.
The meat
gun.
And potatoes.
Yeah.
Yep, you guys
the meat
got
and
it.
Potatoes, a smoking gun.
All right, well, go ahead.
No, I mean, like, the problem is, it's like what Matias was saying, right? There's no rhythm to any of this, but, you know, I'm not a film guy. I'm not going back and breaking down all these plays, but the film people that I trust are showing us these things where it's like the Terry Robiski stuff. It's not stylistically the same, right? They're not doing these two-man play action routes with eight-man protection, but what they are doing is running these passing concepts that, like, have no end to them. It's just kind of random.
Yeah,
no, like, one could get open. No one could get open on, like, half of the passing plays. It sucks.
One of the plays I wish I could just, like, project to everybody right now is there's a play where A.J. Brown caught a pass. I believe he was going from the right side of the offense to the left. And he caught a pass where he ended up outside of the left hash. But it was like a deep slant that, like, or like an intermediate.
The cornerback stopped, right? He, like,
yeah. Stopped. Well, yeah, he stopped. And so did A.J. Brown. Like, they both were like, okay, the play's done. And then Tannehill spins out and finds him. But it's like, on that play, it's like, it seems like there's nothing for A.J. to do except for clear out that route and stop. Like, there are so many plays when it just looks like there is an inefficiency to them. Like, there are big parts of the field where nobody is, where there should be a receiver taking advantage of that, or there's two people in one place, or it's all bunched on one side. Like, I can count on one hand the times this entire season where there's been a play where A.J. Brown, Marcus Johnson, anybody has been in a position to catch the ball and has been in space and has been able to get yards after catch, like, a significant amount. Like, other teams do it to the Titans constantly, and Arthur Smith did it constantly. But this offense, it's like half the times the guys catch passes and fall down because Like, there's no hitting them in stride because they're all routes where you stop. Like, they're not routes where there's, like, a natural pick. Like, it's just so many bad things. Like, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. And then it's that, and then it's, you know, run on the left side towards Swaim or somebody who doesn't get a block, and then it's second and 12, and now you're scrambling to pull out a good pass play when you don't have one in your playbook anyway. And so you just resort to screens or whatever. And then the talent just of it, we talked about it all year. The only time this offense has been successful is when they have had the talent to overcome the bad schemes. Like, then that compounded with turnovers that have happened all season long. Like, it's just been bad. Like, from start to finish, there have been very few games where it looks like Todd Downing has known what to do and who to target. And that is the biggest concern, is that Vrabel doesn't seem like he's in any hurry to change that.
You know, if you're a Titans fan and you watch that 49ers Cowboys game in Wild Card Weekend, and then you tune in that Titans game, you're like, why? It is a crime that they don't get A.J. Brown the football more. He had 9 targets in this game, 5 catches, 5 touches for 142 yards with a long of 41. So take away that long, which I believe was the one-handed touchdown. I think that was the 41 was a play action. Whatever. Take away the 41. You're still at 4 for 101. And I'm not saying use him like Debo. I'm not saying put him as a running back and hand it off to him. I'm saying that the teams in the NFL that have a special player, whether that's, you know, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Stephon Diggs, they get that guy the ball a ton. And I know, well, actually, you know, the excuse is, well, you know, the Titans don't really operate that way. It is, they spread it around. They don't want to highlight anyone. They don't seem to have a problem with that with Derrick Henry. Because go back and watch this team over the first 7 weeks of the season before that guy went down. Because it was that guy and a whole lot of nothing else. They had no problem running the entirety of that offense through Derrick Henry. And all I'm asking for here is to run your passing game through A.J. Brown and to get him the ball more. He is a special player. And y'all know me, I'm not Mr. handing out the trophies, right? I'm not that guy. A.J. Brown's a stud. He is that dude. You got to get him the ball more.
Yeah. You said you're not saying to give him carries, but why not? He is one of the best after.
And he's done well on it. Now, AJ Brown pass, that needs to be thrown wherever you put the Chester Rogers screen.
Yeah, friend of the podcast, Teron Davenport, asked AJ Brown after the season was over if he would mind being used in like a Debo Samuel way. And if you look at the quote on paper, it looks like he's agreeing to it. When you watch him say it, there's a very long pause when he's like, I'll do whatever the team wants me to do. And that's like, why would you do that, though? Like, that's the thing is, like, you have running backs. You don't need to put him there. Like, put him in space versus
corner. Yeah, you know, like, I tend to give Derrick Henry a carry before I give A.J. Brown a carry.
Yeah,
or if you got Mitchell as your running back, well, maybe that's a different conversation, but you got a Hall of Famer.
Like, sure. That's
the thing. But get him on an end around, a jet sweep. I don't know. Give him.
Or just, yeah.
They don't even. A screen. I don't know. They don't even throw screens in. They throw that to Chester Rogers,
which makes no sense.
For no reason.
And by the way, I know we're not on Tannehill yet, but A.J. Brown was facing 10-yard off coverage on that Chester Rogers screenplay. Someone should have noticed that. But.
The RPO?
Yeah.
Oh, you wanted him to, like, check out of it and do that? I mean,
someone. Tannehill, Downing should have called something else, whatever. But that's just an aside. They got to get A.J. Brown the ball more. I don't want to call this offense broken. Because I don't think it is. I think it is problematic. And I made the Robiskie comparison for that specific thing of the passing game makes no sense conceptually. But this offense is not broken and unwatchable. It is just supremely ineffective at times.
It's pretty unwatchable to me. I don't know. But I also saw a lot of bad offensive football in all the other playoff games from this weekend. So I don't know. Maybe I'm expecting too much. But I don't know. I'm assuming Downing's going to be back for another year. Hopefully he can have the Shane Bowen renaissance in his second year, although Downing has already done this in the past with the Raiders, and we all know how that one went. So I'm really not too optimistic. Hopefully with everyone healthy, and hopefully everyone can stay healthy, and adding a couple new pieces, maybe the offense could be a little better next year. But I don't think we can ever expect, at least with Downing as OC, for the offense to be anything close to what it was in 2020 under Arthur Smith.
I mean, there's a real easy question for this. Who looks better in this offense than they did with Arthur Smith? I mean, does the line look better?
Henry, maybe?
No.
Did at the first of the season.
But, I mean, Henry did because he was getting, he was on pace for 150 more carries than he had last year.
You're right.
Yeah, I guess maybe Henry as a receiver.
NWI was a little better, but I think that's a Rob Moore thing, not a...
Swain, well, I think that's maybe?
Because
that's like the only one I can think of.
Not a big Tim Swain fan.
But like he wasn't getting chances because Ferkser and John. It's not like Swain was playing just as much and he had a breakout season. It's like,
yeah.
Like the offensive line looked worse. They constantly looked like they were struggling even when they were healthy. The running backs didn't look as effective per target. The wide receivers didn't look comfortable. Obviously, the tight ends. You know, the one real guy you have to look at is Ferkser, and he looked 100 times worse than he did the year before. Like that, there's like Tannehill did like never looked comfortable and was constantly like some of the biggest plays they made were after he got hit and he was scrambling, or when he had to move around in the pocket because something wasn't like it. It's I don't know. It's tough. Like I don't know who he's helped.
I don't think he's helped anyone other than he helped people not have to learn new terminology on offense.
And like even like a group the offensive line together as a whole, like Nate Davis looked bad early this year.
And he was playing at an all-pro level last year.
Yeah, Questenberry looked good last year. Questenberry at left tackle in this offense looked much better than he did at right tackle this year under Downing. Like, and I don't think Questenberry's good, but and I don't really know if it's just, you know, maybe it was because he got to play next to Saffold instead of getting to play next to Nate Davis, who wasn't as comfortable. And I don't know what it is, but like everybody looked disjointed and just like they didn't understand, even to a point where it looked worse than when Arthur Smith was taken over with Mariota at quarterback. Like it all looked bad. So I mean, that's my big thing is like we can and we will talk about Tannehill and how he cost them the game this playoff game. But the larger picture, the person who has hurt the Titans the most over the last, you know, 4 months or whatever the regular season in this game is Downing. And it's really not close.
You know, honestly, I don't really know where I am in terms of the priority of like, who's more at fault? Is it? I know you think it's Downing. I don't really know where I am. I don't know that it matters a whole heck of a lot. Matthias, do you have like a leaning on that?
I would say probably like 60% Downing, 40% Tannehill, maybe 65-35, something like that.
I maybe would go. I don't know. We'll talk about Tannehill certainly in a minute.
Now, are we talking about for just this game, or are we talking about over the course
of the offensive regression? Not long-term, not over the season, just against Cincinnati.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think if the question is why was the offense fundamentally worse all season than it was under Arthur Smith, I think you just answered your own question. It's because Arthur Smith's not there anymore, and the guy who replaced him isn't very good. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the Titans quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. We're going to talk about just how bad was he, or was this mostly a Todd Downing problem? And we're also going to answer the question that I try to answer in my post-game column, which is, can the Titans win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill? We'll be back in 30 seconds. You're listening to No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. Can the Titans win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill?
You know, after the game ended, I tweeted that we can't win the Super Bowl with him as our quarterback. And then I saw some of the other games, and then I was like, maybe we can win the Super Bowl with him at quarterback. And then I kind of delved into, you know, some of the quarterbacks that have won a Super Bowl, like Nick Foles going on a crazy run, Eli Manning winning twice.
Yeah.
And some of the other game managers. Granted, it really hasn't been happening too much, but even the ones that have made it, you know, they've been kind of middling. Like Jimmy G made the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Jared Goff was having a great season, but he's not a very good quarterback. You know, Matt Ryan, I don't know. Like,
there's a common thread between two of those guys that you mentioned, and they both had Shanahan calling plays for them when they made it to the Super Bowl.
That goes back to the Downing thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Well, let's talk about this.
I think they can.
Not the whole concept, but just the quarterback. So, it's part of like a bunch of stuff I've looked at, obviously, because I've had to have this conversation. So, in the last 10 years, Eli Manning won a Super Bowl against the Patriots,
yes,
where he was clearly the worst quarterback. Like, not in the league, but, I mean, also not the best quarterback in the playoffs or, like, close to that.
Yeah.
Flacco won it in 2012.
Yeah, that's right.
Peyton Manning won it with his noodle arm against Cam Newton's Patriots.
Yeah, but that's I know that. It's still Peyton Manning. It's still his brain. And, B, there's still that all-time defense he had.
Yeah, but the question isn't, can he win it if they have an all-time defense? The question is, can he win it? Can you win with this quarterback? I would argue that Tannehill, on average, is better than Noodle Arm Peyton Manning, and I don't think that's debatable. Then you have Nick Foles, who won it in 2017, and then you have the year that Tom Brady won it when they within that 10-3 or 13-3 Rams game or whatever it was,
yeah,
when he didn't throw a touchdown and he threw an interception, and that was like his only contribution. And so it's like, then you look at last year. It's like, I mean, Mahomes had zero touchdowns and two interceptions and looked terrible. And I'm not saying Mahomes is a bad quarterback. It's not. My point here is that the best quarterback rarely wins the Super Bowl. The MVP has not won the Super Bowl in 20 years. So it's like the question isn't,
you know, do the Titans need a Pat Mahomes, a Josh Allen type to win the Super Bowl? You know, they don't need Aaron Rodgers. The question is, can Tannehill do it?
I think so. I'm going to say yes. I don't know if it feels like a hot take at this point, given everything I've seen on Twitter. And even I tweeted that no, we can't win with him, but I've just kind of taken a step back and realized that it takes a lot of other things to go your way for you to win a Super Bowl. Like, do you think Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowls just because he's one of the best quarterbacks of all time? Partially, yes, but also he is one of the luckiest football players that we have ever seen. Like that game against the Rams. The Rams almost choked it away with 4 turnovers. Like, you need so many things to go your way in order for you to, like, actually reach the Super Bowl and win it that I think we can do it, even if Tannehill, you know, doesn't play as good as he was in 2020 or the second half of 2019.
So let me explain why I think they can't, and I'm going to give 2 reasons. The first of which is just a fact, and I don't think there's going to be much counter-argument. The second one, I know Will has been preparing to respond to the second one, so get ready for that. But the first one is, Matisse, you bring up, right, you have to have a lot of things go your way. Will, you brought up a few examples. You know, I thought of Peyton Manning and that all-time defense he had. You know, Joe Flacco is playing on the other side of Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, and they're really well-coached and all that. Tannehill had the luck. I know the play calling was not good, and he was not necessarily put into favorable positions. But in terms of what he was working with in that game, the 9-sack defensive performance should have outweighed everything in terms of did he have a shot in that game. Because every time that anemic Titans offense took the field and then three plays later left the field as Brett Kern walked on, by the third quarter you were saying to yourself, well, I'll get it back in a minute or two. First, they're going to run the ball with Mixon, then Burrow's going to take a sack, then they're going to throw short of the sticks, another punt, right? That's what Tannehill was working with. He could not have gotten anything better from his defense. Not possible. Never been done. Only one other time in the history of the NFL postseason has a defense recorded 9 sacks. They were unbelievable. Blake Bedingfield brought up at halftime, former Titans scout. I know you don't like him. Former Titans scout, that they might as well have just been playing with 4 offensive linemen because their right guard was getting beaten so badly by Jeff Simmons consistently. So that is my argument number one. It's in one game, Tannehill was working with something really, really special in terms of what was going his way on the other side of the ball, and he couldn't do anything with it. And need I remind you and everyone that the question isn't, can Tannehill win a playoff game? He definitely, he's won two. Granted, he wasn't really needed in those two games. Those were sort of dominated by Derrick Henry. But Tannehill's won 2 playoff games. The question isn't, are you going to go 1 and done with him every year? The question is, are you going to win a Super Bowl? I don't see Ryan Tannehill winning 3 straight or 4 straight postseason games. Here's reason number 2 why I feel that way. This is the 3rd year in a row. Will is chomping at the bit to respond to this, and I'm interested to see what he has to say. But I've watched this guy 3 years in a row blow it. Now, the Chiefs game, blow it's probably strong for that Chiefs game in 2019 in the AFC Championship. The Titans were overmatched. They were heavily underdogs in that game. They had already outlived their life expectancy. But still, you know, Tannehill did not rise to the occasion. He did not take the charge, you know, whatever. So that game is sort of mildly evidence for this idea. I think the Baltimore game is 100% evidence of this idea. That offense laid an egg against the Baltimore Ravens. An offense that, by the way, was number 2 in the NFL during the regular season. And this is becoming a trend with Ryan Tannehill. He's 30-13. In the regular season. He's been a Pro Bowl level regular season quarterback outside of this year because he had some turnover issues. And then this year. So we go from overmatched, probably doesn't count against him. Still, it's not like he played great. 2, laid a big egg, total 180 from the regular season. 2, he had a meltdown against the Bengals. The evidence we have right now allows serious doubt that Ryan Tannehill, when he's needed, is ever going to step up and take charge in the postseason. The guy's 33. It's not like he's going to develop. That is my case.
I'm going to let Matias speak first.
Oh, I was going to let you speak first. But I feel like you probably have more to say and maybe a little bit more anger than I do. But I will say, I don't, for some reason, I thought that Kansas City game from 2019. I thought he played worse, but I was wrong about that. He was actually perfectly fine. Derrick Henry couldn't get anything going, and Tannehill really had no help, and he still ended up playing pretty well, well enough to possibly win the game if the defense had been able to contain Mahomes. But obviously, easier said than done. The Ravens game, yes, he didn't play well. The offense was very poor. I didn't like Arthur Smith's game plan in general, and also they were very shorthanded at receiver. So I don't know. Like, Tannehill didn't play well in that game, but I don't know if I would go so far as to say it as he personally choked in that one. This one was bad. This one was bad, I will admit. I don't know if he was at fault wholly for the Mike Hilton interception, but I would say for the other two, he was. And I do think he ended up costing them the game In addition to Downing, I think they, like we talked about before, they both had blame, but Tannehill definitely played a big part in it. But I keep taking a step back and I keep realizing that he was incredible last year. Even like discount the playoff game, like it that was just a bad game plan in general, and the times were really shorthanded at receiver. But during the regular season and in the 2019 postseason and in the second half of the 2019 season, like, this guy was awesome. He was great. And all of a sudden, he gets a new offensive coordinator, and even the offensive coordinator can't get Tannehill to play well with Julio Jones on the team. I don't know. It's just I keep going back to this isn't normal for him to play like this after we had already seen it for a year and a half.
I will say this too, like you mentioned, Matias, Derrick Henry has also failed to show up in the last two playoff games, really the last three. Now this one, you can blame the injury or whatever, but you know, your best player's got to show up in the postseason, and Derrick is clearly their best, and he has failed in that measure. But Will, your rebuttal.
Okay, so you kind of got to go about this in a few ways. First, we all have to understand and admit, because we already have, that the Bengals game was decided by Tannehill and Downing. They were the two contributing factors in the loss.
Yes.
Now, this is where people get tripped up, and I told both of y'all to watch the previous playoff games because I was going to talk about it and that this was going to be a talking point. Whether y'all did that assignment or not, that is up to you, and that's something you have to live with in your heart. But I just went back, I watched this. I've seen these games twice. Let's go back to the Kansas City game. In the Kansas City game, the Titans were up 17-7. Right? They really didn't move the ball well. I mean, the whole time they didn't move the ball well. Like they Henry had 19 carries for 69 yards, so just at 3.5 yards per attempt. Like, that's not great. The problem is, in that game, they had him 17-7. It was, I think, in the middle of the second quarter, and the defense all of a sudden just started getting absolutely cooked. Now, if you listen to Wesley Woodyard or other defensive players, the rumor is that that's the game when Vrabel took the play calling out of Dean Pease's hands, and, you know, the rest is history. Like, the Titans end up, you know, I think Tannehill had 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions in that game, and had passed for 200 yards. I don't have it right in front of me, but I know half of his completions were first downs. He had 6.7 yards per attempt, and I do have it: 2 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. So that loss is put on him retroactively, because nobody's going to blame Derrick Henry, and people have forgotten to blame the defense.
I'm not putting that loss on him. I don't think I said that.
Then let me skip.
Some people are. I've seen that on Twitter.
Thank you.
All I'm saying is he could have been better, and he failed to elevate them in a winning manner. That's all I'm saying.
And I would say he was the best skill position player in that game. He was the best quarterback, best running back, best like wide receiver, like, of that group. He was the player that played the best at that position. Now, what I would ask, that I'll skip ahead to a future point, is if the Titans had the defense from Saturday in that game, and they're up 17-7, and you know Tannehill's not going to turn the ball over, do you think they lose that game in Kansas City with a 10-point lead?
Tannehill. That's the scenario that happened, right? And we have hindsight; they did lose.
Well, what I'm saying is, you put the reason why they lost that game is because the defense stopped containing Mahomes. They started letting him run around, and then after that happened, it was just a complete free for all. Now, having seen this defense against Kansas City this year, and having seen them against the Bengals in the postseason, if you drop this defense into that game where you know Tannehill's going to finish with 2 touchdowns and 0 interceptions, Do you think they win that game after they have a 17-7 lead?
Yeah.
So
I say yes.
Yeah,
dude, but I think they could have beaten the Chiefs this year.
Now,
I don't.
Yeah.
Did you watch Sunday night?
That I mean, I watched.
This season,
and I watched them try. Like,
exactly.
We're getting off topic because my point here.
But you're saying they could have won it with a better defensive performance, and I'm saying you're not going to get a better defensive performance against the Chiefs in the postseason.
I'm not saying they need a better
performance than what they got against the Chiefs.
We say that. I mean, the Bucks beat the hell out of them last year in the playoffs. Like, killed them. I mean, fair. Well, I mean,
yeah. That's granted. The Bucks had a really, really good defense, but I think the Bucks defense is comparable to the Titans. The Bucks were so fast and explosive, and the Titans just bully you to death up front. But like you're right. We're getting excited. Let's jump to Baltimore.
Well, okay, okay. Well, then we'll have to revisit this in a second.
If there's more, I didn't realize there was more to say.
Well, the question is if the question is can Tannehill win the Super Bowl with the Titans? If you put this defense with him, and that's not even like their better offense that they had in 2020 for most of the year because they didn't do well in the playoffs. Like I'm saying, if you put this defense on that team, they win that game, and they're in the Super Bowl against Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers, and I don't think they lose that game. So what my whole point with this is we are cherry-picking this performance from Tannehill, and we're saying they lost the other two games. We're not going to say anything bad about Derrick Henry, even though he hasn't averaged more than 3.5 yards per attempt. And I'm not even saying it's his fault. But what I'm saying is, in the last three playoff games, he's had 19 carries, 18 carries, 20 carries. And that's fine most of the time, but if he's not ripping off big gains, especially if there's a running back who's doing more, there are times when that hurts the team. On 4th-and-1, on 2-point conversions in a close game, like there are times when that hurts the team. Now, again, this pass loss, totally on Tannehill and Downing. That's fine. But my point, and I'll talk about Baltimore in a second, is that that Tannehill is not the reason we lost the Kansas City game. Like that's not why they lost that game.
Agreed.
So moving on beyond that, the Baltimore game again, 6.7 yards per attempt, one touchdown, and the interception. I posted this clip on Twitter, and everybody should go check it out. When he throws that pass. And I'll send it in our group chat right now so you guys know what I'm talking about. When he throws that pass to Khalif Raymond, all Khalif Raymond has to do is turn around and catch the ball. All he has to do is act like he doesn't explode as soon as he touches, I think it's Humphreys. Like, you're not asking him to bully him. I just sent it in the group chat. You're not asking him to bully. Like, you don't need him to go up and get a pass. All you need him to do is not turn around and fall. And that pass is right in his lap. At worst, it's an incompletion. So, again, another game where Henry averaged 2.2 yards per carry in that game.
I want to clarify. I'm not saying Tannehill lost them either of those games. I put the Chiefs game on the defense just being overwhelmed by Mahomes. And I put the Ravens game on John Robinson because once Corey Davis went down, they were screwed because they had zero receiving depth. But okay, what I'm saying is we're seeing a pattern of Tannehill not showing up. And then this weekend, he did lose them the game along with Todd Downing.
Okay. So, again, I agree with the second point. The whole not showing up thing, in those two games, they scored 4 touchdowns, right? In the Kansas City game and Baltimore, they scored 4 touchdowns total. Three of them were from Tannehill passing, and one of them was from Derrick Henry running. It's not Tannehill not showing up in these games. It's Tannehill showing up, but the structure of the Titans offense, when the running game doesn't work and you have something like – I will never advocate that they should take the ball out of Derrick Henry's hands. That's not the point of this, and I'm afraid that's what it's going to get turned into. But my point is, when the run gets shut down constantly, and you find yourself constantly in you know, third and nine, second and nine, all those situations, it puts you in a bad, you know, there's no rhythm, there's no game script for that. And at a certain point, like, it gets difficult to maintain. Like, these weren't blowout losses. There, it was 35 to 24, and so it was an 11-point loss in Kansas City, and then it was right. And so, what I'm saying is I don't think again, other than this weekend, like so in the Baltimore game, like in the Kansas City game, 6.7 yards per attempt, over 50% of his completions were for first downs. He had two touchdowns in that game, and one touchdown and an interception that I don't put on him in both of those games. Like my thing is. What you should expect, what a good Tannehill game should look like in the playoffs, and what we have seen before and what makes sense is he's not going to get a lot of volume in passing, so you're not going to get a 200, 300-yard game if you're controlling the game. You should want 6.7 yards per attempt, multiple touchdowns, and no interceptions. And you should want him to get first downs on half or more of those plays because – or more of his completions, because that's how you move the chains. And if you're in third and nine, you know, third and seven, all that, like, that's all you really need for this offense is you move the chains, you get a new set of downs for Derrick Henry, and then you see if you can make something happen then. So the overarching question is, can you win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback? I would say that all the data says yes, and that this is the outlier, but the problem is the Titans lost in Kansas City, which was totally fair. They lost to the eventual Super Bowl champions. Like, there is no shame in that. Tannehill, two touchdowns, 200 yards, no interceptions. Like, that's a good game. Like, that nobody should knock him for that, and I don't think any of us are. Then the Baltimore game, they lost, and the offense didn't do well. But again, I'm not saying Derrick Henry is a bad running back, but he had 2.2 yards per carry, and that was on 18 carries. Tannehill and A.J. Brown scored the only touchdown of the game, and then the interception to end it was when Khalif Raymond just fell down. So I don't put that loss on Tannehill, and I also don't know what more he could have done when Corey Davis went out. And you're going against those defensive backs that the Ravens had last year, and they're giving A.J. Brown special attention, and you're not getting anything from the running game.
So,
like, go ahead.
Is your argument that they need not a superhuman effort from Derrick Henry? I'm not talking about, like, the Seattle game. But are you saying unless you get, you know, 18, 20 carries for 100, 115 yards from Derrick Henry, that they're probably not going to win?
What I'm saying is, if you give a running back
in the postseason,
really in any game, if you give him 20-ish carries and they haven't broken a long run or they're under 4 yards per attempt, there has been any offense would struggle, is what I'm saying. So the problem is, the Titans offense has unwavering confidence in Derrick Henry. And again, most of the time, that's not a problem. But again, when you just, that's not sustainable. Like,
I agree with that, which is part of the reason that I don't think he can win a Super Bowl with Tannehill, because I don't think you're going to get three or four of those performances in a row in the postseason against the best of the best from Henry or the running game in general.
I mean, and that may be true, just in terms of you may not get that from the running game, but then the answer is you need a number two receiver, and you need them to be out there on the field all the time. Because A.J. Brown's great. Like, and in fact, I think most Tannehill games, when he doesn't turn the ball over like he did this past game, I think he and A.J. Brown would have been enough. Because if they just don't have the interceptions and he and A.J. Brown hook up like they did, then they're in the divisional round next week. So the
number two receiver thing, and Matias, I'm eager for you to jump back into this conversation. It's been a while since we've heard from you, buddy.
That's why I let Matias talk first, because I was like, I have a lot of stuff to talk about.
I was intrigued. It was a good conversation.
He had the number two receiver in each of those games, except for up until the last drive in the last two. Kansas City's got AJ and Corey Davis. Baltimore's got AJ and Corey Davis up until that last drive when Corey Davis went out. And this past week in Cincinnati, he had AJ Brown and Julio Jones up until the last drive.
Right. Well, Julio's been going in and out, so I don't know.
Yeah,
and
but we're talking about one game. We're not talking about or the post.
Go ahead, Matias.
I don't know. I really don't know where I stand because I'm so on the fence. It's not that I'm trying to play both sides. I really just don't know. Like, I like Tannehill. I think he's good. He's not great. And I think maybe you can win a Super Bowl with him if Derrick Henry is running hot, or even if we get a decent offensive coordinator. Like, I don't know, because I've seen Tannehill with Arthur Smith look like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Is he just not that anymore? Like, I don't know if we can just say that. Like, has our opinion on him changed?
I don't know, because I think a lot of us thought the 2019 season was going to prove to be a mirage, and then it really wasn't, because he backed it up in 2020. And the three of us spent all off season. Like, I'm not Jared Stillman. I haven't been like hating on Tannehill for years. I loved Tannehill before this season. The mini turnover meltdowns kind of jaded me, but for me, it's just and this can be the last thing I say on it. I think that you have to have someone in the postseason who, when it's not all working, when it's not seamless, when you don't have the big Derrick Henry game, someone you can turn to and say, you find a way. You know who did that? Joe Flacco. You know who did that? Nick Foles. Nick Foles wasn't sitting back dinking and dunking in that Super Bowl against Tom Brady. They had him throwing down the field, and he did it well. Joe Flacco, in that divisional round game against Denver, at Denver, against Peyton Manning, still in his prime at 36 or however old he was, it didn't all go well. They were behind. And I'm not saying that Jacoby Jones touchdown over Raheem Morris was some heroic thing. He just kind of flung it up, and the coverage was bad. But Joe Flacco stepped up and made plays in that game in a way that Tannehill has not when the running game hasn't been there. That's my piece on this. I don't really have anything else to add.
It's interesting you mentioned throwing down the field, because Tannehill was throwing down the field pretty well in this game, obviously, to A.J. Brown. Probably should have done a little bit more of that and maybe involved Julio Jones or someone else in there, but that just wasn't in the game plan. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to look at this. I also think I hate to say that, like, a $30 million per year quarterback needs more help, but I do think so. Like, Firkser was not really himself for all of this season.
They got to get a tight end. Whether they've got Tannehill or Joe Montana, they got to get a tight end.
Yeah, they need a tight end, and we have tried to make NWI a thing. It's not a thing, man. It's just not. That's not happening.
Trip Rodgers is also not a thing.
I know. We really like try to sell ourselves on him as like a great slot receiver in the offseason. That did not prove to be true at all. Des Fitzpatrick looks like a bust already. We try to get Racy McMath involved. Like, maybe we were expecting too much out of the offense when you kind of go back and look at some of the talent that has actually been put on the field, and they're not good. They're not good players, and maybe Tannehill just needs a little more help, and honestly, that's fine, because what quarterback doesn't need help? I mean, Joe Burrow has Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, Uzomah, who looks like one of the better tight ends in the league. Joe Mixon is one of the better pass-catching running backs in the league. Like, I don't know, man. Every quarterback needs help, and I don't know if Tannehill really had enough.
Will, yeah, your final word on the Tannehill debate?
Oh, I'm sure we'll talk about this all offseason. There's no way this is the last thing we'll talk
Tannehill
about.
On this Tannehill debate.
So let's talk about something else too. Like, you were talking about Nick Foles. Like, he also had Frank Reich as his OC and Peterson as his head coach. Like, he had a good offensive, like, minded staff. Like, it's not like he was just like, the only way we're going to win it is if I rip it deep. It's like, well, no, one of the touchdowns was to Ertz that was, like, up the seam. Like, you know, he wasn't throwing to bums and all that, and Alshon was having a great year because he stayed healthy. Like, the thing is, I think no matter who it is at quarterback, whether it's Mahomes, whoever, you have to have two players on the field that you think can be game changers at the skill position, just as skill position players. So, like, last year, Brady had Gronk and Mike Evans, and Fournette was hot. Like, you know, Mahomes
Antonio Brown, Godwin, he had everybody.
There you go. Like, yeah, like, and the, you know, and we can do this for every team or whatever,
yeah.
But it's like, I mean, like, Kelce and Hill, like, famously are, like, the best player, like, you know, offer some of the most diverse things of their position. Like, so, you know, you need to have that. And if a defense can just take away one of those guys, like, if I told you that the next defense that the Chiefs were going to play, which I guess is the Bengals, is going to say, okay, Travis Kelce will not catch a pass. Like, I think that I think that there's a good chance the Bengals win that game. If you're the Titans and you're playing the Titans and you're saying, okay, they're going to give the ball to Derrick Henry 18 times and we're going to hold him to under 4 yards and he's going to get no long touchdowns. Like, I don't care who's quarterback. I don't think A.J. Brown and insert quarterback here are going to be enough to beat that team in the playoffs. Like, maybe in the regular season, but I just don't think so in the playoffs. Like, and it's not really anybody's fault because, you know, if Julio stays healthy, cool. Like, if Julio's on the field on that last play and he's the, you know, if he runs the route that Nick Westbrook-Ikhina ran, I don't think he gets bullied off the ball like Nick Westbrook-Ikhina does, and I don't think it's an interception. So it's like, there's little things that you can blame whoever on. Like, you know, Corey Davis had his mystery injury or whatever and went out at halftime, which is the only reason why Khalif Raymond was getting a reception or a target, and they were also down Adam Humphries. So it's like, and everybody's going to be banged up in the postseason. But if you're going to win a Super Bowl, you kind of need a little bit of health luck to stay, like, to stay ready and to have those playmakers. So, you know, it's a hard question because if Tannehill wins a Super Bowl, everybody will just say, ah, I'm sorry, Tannehill. Like, I was wrong. And everybody's win-win. But if you're negative on a topic and you're just like, they can never win a Super Bowl with Tannehill, I mean, how many different players have won a Super Bowl at quarterback over the last 20 years? Like, not a lot. Like, Brady's won 8 of them, it feels like. So, you know, it's a really easy thing to say, and it's a really easy thing to say, yeah, but are they going to beat the Chiefs? It's like, well, maybe. Like, I mean, like, yeah, that's why they play the games. So, it's a very, like, easy thing to say, and I don't think you can back it up. And I do think that 9 times out of 10, if you put this defense with the offense that they had in the regular season last year, I think that they may not win a Super Bowl, but they at least win a game or two, and then we're not having this conversation.
We've still got a ton to talk about, but we don't have time. So, to next week, we will punt all the assistant to the assistants that got fired. We hardly even talked about the good from the game, which was the defensive performance. And we haven't really talked about the offseason in the sense of, like, a general look at needs and stuff like that. And so we're going to have another jam-packed episode next week. May take a little bit of time off after that to rest up from the grind of the long season. But we've still got a ton to talk about as we put the 2022 season to bed. We're not done, though, with this episode because we've still got the most important part, arguably, of this podcast, and that is the Stop the Nonsense segment, and that will be happening in just one moment. We are back for Stop the Nonsense, and I will say, there's been plenty of it, because in their ire and melancholy over this loss, Titans fans collectively froke out after this game and have posted some of the dumbest takes and opinions you will ever see on here. Will some of them make it into this conversation we're about to have? Who knows? But what do you guys got?
I don't know where to start. There's a... there's been I could talk about some of the stuff Titans fans have been saying. I saw a couple of people saying that we should trade Derrick Henry. That was an interesting one, as if Derrick Henry is not the entire offense for most of most of our offensive success. That is insane to me. As if we forgot that he ran for 2,000 yards in 2020 and was on pace to run for 2,000 yards again this year. Sure, Foreman did fine. He did well. Hilliard was a decent, you know, third string running back also, but it's just an insane take to me. And I feel like Titans fans are kind of losing their mind a little bit, probably have to just relax and take it one step at a time. Another person who has to relax is Juju Smith-Schuster. There was a report today that he's interested in signing with the Chiefs as a free agent. As if he has any say on the matter. It's up to the Chiefs. I don't know why they would even want him. He has been quite bad for some time. And my last stop nonsense is Barry Bonds not being selected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. I think it's a little ridiculous, honestly. Like, I get it. The whole steroids thing. I was on the other side of it for a lot of it. But then I started realizing, I don't think it really mattered all that much. We really don't know if other people that are already in the Hall of Fame also took steroids. We really don't know. And David Ortiz was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. I'm pretty sure he also was caught. I think he was suspended for a positive for PEDs or one of those. So I find the hypocrisy in baseball pretty funny and a little ridiculous, but I won't delve too much into that because Will has no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I heard you say something about like stocks and bonds or something. I don't know what any of these words mean.
Q is getting my stop the nonsense. Oh, Q, Quentin Spain. Was this yours, Will?
No, I have another Bengals player, but I'm actually supporting them in a heel turn.
Okay.
But go ahead.
So I'll talk about Quentin Spain, who tweeted and then promptly deleted the following after getting his you-know-what beat by Jeffrey Simmons for the entire game. He tweeted this. Big 3.5 backwood of that Titans pack tonight, and F at Jeffrey Simmons. You can see me with the hands with your BA. Okay, first of all, I have no idea what that means up until the first F-bomb. Big 3.5 backwood of that Titans pack tonight. I have no clue what that means. And any translation help there?
I got nothing for you.
I think I'm the wrong demographic for this, but my understanding is that like you say that like it's kind of like we're doing this like in honor of or like in memory of. It's like we're doing this because of something.
We spent like 5 minutes between Vrabel and AJ Brown at the podium trying to figure out what in the world this means.
You didn't ask AJ Brown because AJ Brown would have known. You meant before they were like. I'm surprised AJ doesn't know that. But I don't know how to explain it really any better than that.
So that's the first thing is I didn't understand what it meant. First of all, the Bengals won the game, right? And they deserved to win with the way that Burrow played and their defense getting the takeaways and taking advantage of Tannehill's mistakes. But, like, the offensive line had an all-time bad performance. Like, this was not the game for Quentin Spain or anyone else up front offensively for the Bengals to be trash-talking. Like, this was the game where you thank your lucky stars you head to the locker room and get back to the practice field on Wednesday. So, just, they got killed. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons ate them alive, as did Autry, Landry, and Dupree. And then the third thing is, of all the people that were in that building on Sunday, about 70,000 at least, or excuse me, on Saturday, not an empty seat, both teams, staffs, everything, reporters. Jeffrey Simmons is number 70,000 in terms of people I would most want to fight, he would be dead last on that list. Vrabel would be a close, like, 69,999. He'd be that close second. But who in the world's wanting to throw hands with Jeff Simmons? Good night. Terrible decision on your part, Quentin Spain.
Yeah, he didn't want to do it in the middle of the game. His hands were barely on Simmons before he got by. I mean, like, look, like, I get, like, it's a really cool thing to do, like, once the game is over, to kind of, like, hide and record yourself and be like,
exactly, that's what this is. It's the classic, like, you know, fake tough guy thing.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, they got their teeth kicked in. Like, I mean, honestly, like, if Jackrabbit Jenkins has that interception, like, if it doesn't bounce off his hands and, like, it's a pick six, everybody all week is talking about how this is, like, the best performance of all time, and they'd ask, like, could the Titans defense win a game without any points from the Titans offense? Like, if they had scored points, like, that's the only thing they didn't do, because they had 9 sacks, but nobody talks about the 2 sacks that got waved off, because you were in the stadium, nobody could hear the whistle. Not the offensive lineman, not the quarterback, nobody.
That was on the officials. They should have, like, I know we couldn't hear the whistle, but, like, there was also no indication from their body language that the play was over, and Burrow got crushed twice.
Yeah, the good thing, like, I mean, in the stands, like, I was probably one of the 1% that was, like, I would, like, watch the play clock, and I would, like, look, and I think the back judge tried to signal on the delay game, and then on the timeout, like, Zach Taylor, is that his name, Taylor? He was screaming, like, he was running, like, on the field trying to take a timeout, and he signaled it, and it got called, and the whistle blew, but nobody could hear because it was so loud. So, like, the whistle's blowing and nobody can see it. So I see the ref running onto the field and I'm like, oh no, they're going to get, like, an unnecessary roughness because they just smoked Burrow, like, in the legs too. But, like, anyway, like, that should have been Simmons's 4th or 5th sack or whatever it was. Like, but yeah, like, it's a dumb thing. It's a dumb thing for Spain to say. Like, I wouldn't even remind people that you were, like, on that team for a week. Like, I mean, I would have been, like, proud of my squad, and that's it.
All right, well, what do you got? You said it's a different Bengals player.
Yeah, so this is it's actually a quote from last year that's being circulated around, and because the Chiefs or the Bengals are going to play the Chiefs in Arrowhead, and Joe Burrow said last year it gets way louder in the SEC than any of these NFL stadiums.
Yeah,
and the big thing going around is. Somebody quote tweeted Lawrence Tynes, quote tweeted it that image or whatever and said, to be fair, Joe has never played an Arrowhead. Having said that, he's in for a rude awakening. There's no place louder in sports and it's not up for debate. And that's very much like, tell me you've never been to an SEC game without telling me you've ever been to an SEC game.
Yeah, because, I had no problem with Joe Burrow's comments there.
Yeah, because he's right. Like, I mean, I've been to a Tennessee Vanderbilt game that was so loud that I was in the press box and it was like shaking the glass. Like it was so incredibly loud. Like I love the NFL. I lean the NFL on 90% of the things where there's differences, but the atmosphere in college football, if for no other reason than the student section guarantees that you're going to have, you know, at least in the SEC, that you're going to have 20 to 30,000 loud, drunk 20-year-old kids like screaming, and then you have the rest of the stands too that, you know, we've got people screaming. Like if you have 100,000 people and the, you know, Arrowhead has 70,000 or whatever it fits, and then you just said, okay, what if we take Arrowhead's clientele and then we add 30,000 loud, drunk students, you know, screaming as loud as they can for the whole game. Like it's not a fair comparison. And anybody who doesn't understand that is just showing their ignorance, and it's not a diss to the NFL, it's just a different product.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, next week we will be back to talk about everything we didn't get to talk about in this episode. Additionally, you'll definitely want to come back because we will be breaking down what Mike Vrabel and the Titans coaching staff needs to do to emerge victorious in the Pro Bowl. Full strategic breakdown coming up. Keys to the game, offense, defense. It's going to be great. Not really. We're not going to talk about that.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
Appreciate everyone sticking with us, tuning in. We'll see y'all next week. Until then, for Will and Matias, I'm Luke, reminding you and everyone else in the sports world to stop the nonsense.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.